from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Now, if you recall, some of you hardcore listeners, they were wondering, where is that episode that Jacob talked about, bonus show specifically, where he said he was going to bring Krista on, and they were going to have a talk about gender issues. Well, it turns out that I didn't realize that I was constantly asking Krista to be on the bonus show, and that this made her feel as though she was relegated to only bonus content. So I didn't realize that, first of all, so apologies to any of the other hosts that I've done that to inadvertently. Sorry, guys, I didn't realize there was kind of like a fight for who gets to be on the free show. Sorry. Do you accept my apology?
Absolutely. You know, it wasn't that. I don't mind doing the bonus show. It's just this one I did a lot of research for, so I wanted more people to hear it.
Well, that's fair, and but here's the thing. It's actually so much of the show is not me. So this could be the one show where I'm not talking as much as my host. This could be this could be it, folks. This could be the show which I talk the least.
Don't get everybody's hopes up.
Oh, well, they do apparently like your voice. So this show has been compiled mostly by Krista, although she has been talking about it so much that I feel that I've memorized most of the notes that she's written. But still, it is something that you, Krista, have been passionate about. So this is your show. This is officially your show, kind of like a couple of maybe 40 shows ago when Ryan had his show.
Okay.
He had his show, and you know what he made it on? Well, about sex. So, you know, there seems to be like a tendency for you guys to really aim for the lowest common denominator. What's up with that?
There's some sex in this one, too. We talk about porn and things. Mm-hmm. But if we get there, I shouldn't actually promise anything, because there's so much in this topic that we might not get to a lot of it.
If it gets really long, and if I can figure out a way to cut it up, it might itself even become a bonus show if there's this much to say. It also depends on how much stamina we have to do the show, because before we came here, I did something that I usually refuse to do, and that is trying to shop for clothing.
Yes, because as part of Jacob's sort of a fail thing, he's realized that one of his adult fails is the way he dresses a little bit.
You may have noticed, any of you that have befriended me on Facebook, that I don't exactly have the fairest sense of style. It's usually mostly because I can't tell you how much of the clothes that I'm wearing is either being stolen, as in this red shirt that says bleepity bloop. This used to be Ryan's. I've stolen it, but I think that he's given up on it because he can't fit in this anymore. Then there's these shorts that I think were just given away by someone who is rather embarrassed by the fact that they are so short.
They are quite short.
They're quite short.
Embarrassingly so.
Yeah. They're short, like, I'd say about 8 inches above the knee when your legs are folded.
They're like khaki hot pants.
They are khaki hot pants. And this shirt.
Okay, I would like to just say, so listeners know, these are not shorts that Jacob wears for lounging around the house. We went to lunch in these. We went to Ryan's birthday lunch today in these.
To be fair, when you're standing up, the shorts almost come close to the knees, but not really. If I just sort of stretch it down. Anyways, in the last article of clothing that I have, this polyester button shirt, which, although it looks okay, is extremely shiny. I look like an Italian gangster, but the problem with this thing is that it's polyester, like pure polyester. So if it's hot at all, or you sweat in this, forget about
it. It's like wearing a tent.
It is wearing a tent. And I got this at, I think, one of those used clothes stores, because, you know, it did at the time seem like no one in their right mind should throw this out. But upon wearing it a few times, you realize, why did? Because it's
I don't think there's anything
polyester
wrong,
should
though.
Never be a shirt.
There's nothing wrong with shopping at thrift stores. That's fine. I don't want.
There's
don't
a couple
want
rules. There's a couple rules though. If you shop at one of these thrift stores, do not buy underwear there.
Agreed.
And try to avoid any of the shirts with the giant pit stains. That's a lot. That's living matter up in there.
Yuck. So in our 4-hour shopping excursion, Jacob, what items did you pick up?
Well, I managed to find a pair of shoes. And that fit. That didn't look like clown shoes. Because when you have size 12, once in a while, some shoes will look good. But for the most part, every shoe you put on, you feel like a clown. And it's, I mean, 12 isn't even that huge.
It doesn't help that you bought shoes that were red and bright red and bright yellow, your other shoes.
No, they're not yellow. It's red and gray yellow.
And they've got yellow on them.
There's no yellow.
Okay.
If there's yellow, it's on the underneath. No one ever sees the underneath of the shoe. But it's a running shoe. It's meant to be looked at because it's beautiful.
Yeah, so out of 4 hours of shopping, Jacob picked up shoes. End of list.
After that, here's the funny thing. I don't know if you guys remember this, where I said that people believe that they have this control over their emotions, but they don't really. And one of the ways that I said that my emotions sort of come out is in me being a little bit of a jerk throughout the fucking day when I'm doing something that I hate, and I hate shopping.
Yep.
And at one point, you were saying, okay, stop being cute, hear all this meanness, and now it just sucks. I can totally understand where it was coming from. It was just this, I'm at my limit. I need to get the fuck out of here.
I was impressed, though. I mean, you did look at a few things. You tried a bunch of stuff on, which was shocking. Very shocking.
But that's what's so frustrating about it. You try something on and you realize it's all hard to find something that fits you and fits you right. Like, I don't want to do the whole, if you're going to buy clothing, right? You don't just buy the first pair of pants and you think, oh, it fits, as in, it's not squeezing my balls to death. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really fitting. I just want to find something that actually looks good, where you say, unequivocally, you look good. And I think anybody buying clothes out there realizes that if they're really trying to achieve that, it's a fucking process that takes so long. It seems like every article of clothing is designed for someone other than you when you go out shopping.
And we weren't even be skimpy on price. I mean, we were looking at some higher-end clothing stuff.
Yeah.
And still nothing.
Fuck nothing. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about what the main crux of what we have, which is essentially, it starts off, I guess the story starts off with you reading a book called Stiff that was sort of like
kind of sent to you. Okay, so what's happening right now is that since I turned 24 this year, I've decided to do a different 30-day challenge every month. So the 30-day challenge I did the month before this was 30 days to be more girly. Because I've had a lot of trouble.
Such a bad girl.
I'm so bad at being a girl.
So bad, yeah.
Case in point would be rom-coms. Can't watch them. Hate romantic comedies. Hate girly mags. I mean, violently hate. Like, find no pleasure in shopping. I have very few female friends. You know, bad at being a girl. And a lot of the research I started doing when I was like, okay, I'm going to be more girly. So I thought, you know, I wrote down a few different points that I thought would help. So, you know, trying to re-engage my female relationships, which I've started doing only a couple days ago because that took a while to own up to. You know, better relationship with my mom, started doing a little bit of research into, like, actually trying to read girly mags and finding out what the allure is and doing this. I indulged myself in a little bit of shopping, which was simultaneously stressful and, you know, some fun, not really. But what I found interesting is that every time I typed in feminism or feminine, trying to be more feminine, I kept running across this headline, which was either the rise of women or the fall of men.
Right.
And most articles talked about both because these are very correlated. And just sort of by accident, I started reading these and watching a lot of TED Talks. And then Ryan had that book called Stiffed. The fall of the American man or whatever. And I don't remember the name. I got it written down.
It's in the notes. Exactly. Please, folks.
The betrayal of the American man.
I'm not fucking around. Check the notes, okay? There's more to it than you can possibly imagine. Last bonus show, by the way, footage of a walrus sucking his own dick. Check out the notes, okay? Trying to get everybody to do it.
Okay, so, so I started doing a lot of research, and one video would lead to another, and the book led to a bunch of articles, and it's amazing. I mean, this problem runs far and wide and deep and in everything. And
it runs in every known direction.
Well, basically, think about it this way. It's the rise of women and the fall of men. So it affects everyone because you're either a man or a woman or, you know, somewhere in between. And in that case, it faces you as well.
This is a really important topic because I think that we got a taste of it a little while ago through the whole elevator gate thing. Rebecca Watson getting hit on in an elevator, which caused a pretty big shitstorm. And I think the realization that there is something going on. Now, what I think what we're going to try to explore in the podcast is going to be what is happening really to our identities and our gender roles, because they're changing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think there's the truth is right now, I think from all the research, if I could say, taking a broad look at it, signs are not good. They're not horrible. They're not, we can't change this. But the truth is that we are in a giant, we're in a big transitional period right now, I feel. And we have to kind of approach this with the idea that the challenges ahead are going to be hard, because it's not just about the facts, it's also about how it's interpreted on both sides. And I think that's one of the things that you realize when you're reading, that what surprised you the most about Stift was that it was written by a feminist.
Absolutely. And a lot of these articles about this, the problem, like the fall of men and how we need to be paying attention to this and how this is a big problem, are written by feminists, because they're the ones that are really paying attention to the problem with gender roles. So one thing I think we should talk about before we get too far into this is really talk about the elephant in the room and explain what is happening. What is the fall of men? What is the rise of women? What do we mean by this? So what we're talking about is basically the idea that in the 60s and 70s, there was some female revolution, bra burning, etc. And women felt empowered, had the ability to sort of change their identity. We had feminism. So as women, we've had the opportunity to take more control of our own lives. So we're very grateful for that. But it's really helped us reshape our identities in this new world, because we're expected to. We are wearing suits, we're wearing pants, we're going into the workforce, we're feeling empowered, we're taking control of our lives.
We're gonna make it after all.
So we have this opportunity to feel empowered and feel like our roles are changing, and that's okay, right? Because women have a lot of support for that kind of thing. Now, what is happening simultaneously is that the male gender role, the old stereotypes have become obsolete. For a lot of reasons. One, because women's roles are changing. Women are now finding that because we're taking more solace in our female companionship, we're finding that we need men emotionally to rely on a little bit less. We don't need them as breadwinners. We don't need them to reproduce, because a lot of women are not as interested in having children. So what's happening is we're marginalizing the role of men, and men are feeling like, I'm not necessarily needed to be the breadwinner. It's not necessary for me to be there for emotional support for my female companion, things like this. And so what is their role in society? And as a result, we're finding that domestic abuse issues are rising. There's a lot more men beating their wives than there was before.
Well, there's a lot more of the I don't know if this word exists, and I'll probably flub it trying to say it, but I want to say dichotomization, if you want. It's essentially this, where this is the same phenomenon that we're experiencing as atheists, actually, where we're noticing that as we express ourselves, I'll repeat, as we express ourselves in our non-belief, the believers themselves will push harder against that. It's like a pendulum swing. So I think it's important for us to understand that as one rises, there is a price. There is a pendulum swing. Now, hold on. Let me finish with that. See, the problem that we have right now when we look at gender issues is that we try to look at three worlds simultaneously. We have the industrialized world, say the world that you and I live in. Then we have, say, the emerging world. And we have the third world. And the emerging and the third world have different gender issues than we have. But we conflate a lot of the issues, and we bring that up when we're trying to deal with the issues in the industrialized world itself.
You have to be careful with that, because actually some of this is happening in second world and even third world countries, because what's happening is
like Libya and Syria.
India and yeah. China. In China now, female children are becoming more desirable. In India, we're finding that because women are taking a lot of the roles in all the places we're setting up there, all North America is setting up there, like right.
Customer service.
You know, women are taking over those roles, so they're yeah. bringing more money into the home. And so we're finding sort of a latent version of what's happening here happening in those countries as
but
well.
But it's not exactly the same. And
no,
in many places, I would say that the problem is the reactionary pendulum swing in those places are going to be a lot graver, a lot more, let's say... visible.
I'm afraid of using the term pendulum swing because we are talking about the fall of men, and the fall of men isn't about the pendulum swing. The rise of women is happening because basically the digital world is an environment where being strong is not as much of an advantage. Having an ability to be able to sit down and focus, to be able to communicate in a group, to be able to manage relationships.
Social media world.
That is the world. Women are taking a bigger role in social media, and as a result, they're doing really well. And the fall of men is not necessarily happening as a pendulum swing. The fall of men is happening partially because men are not dealing well with the digital world. We're going to talk a little bit later about how, and I really want to be careful about this, I have nothing against porn, I have nothing against video games, but...
Yeah, we'll be talking about kind of the way in which those technologies affect us as human beings, because they have an effect. It would be ridiculous to just assume that they don't.
So it's not so much that it's a pendulum swing. It's kind of same factors that are helping women advance in the digital information age are the same factors that are hurting men. And part of the problem, men aren't being abusive deliberately to fight against this. Men are being abusive partially because, I mean, the woman who wrote Stiff, she went to a lot of these groups where they try and rehabilitate men. And what they talk about in those groups is not like, oh, you're a bad person for doing this. They talk about what is the problem. And men are talking about feeling out of control. They're not in control in their lives. And the only time they do feel in control is when they're doing these acts that feel masculine, where their adrenaline is pumping, where they have the testosterone. But they feel like during the most of their life, they don't have that.
Well, here's an anecdotal bit of evidence. But it is a kind of story that makes me think about what you say, because... Part, you know, like the other part of my life involves mixed martial art, which me and Ryan have a podcast on it, and we talk a lot about it. And of course, it's a comedy site because, I mean, we joke about this type of thing. But what you notice is that even in like really, say, macho oriented sports, the tale of the guy trying to make it into whatever fight organization is starting to get pretty similar. Like, for instance, guy who has a wife who's being supported by that wife, who feels that he needs to prove himself, that this is exactly the way that he can do it. Because, I mean, what is more masculine than punching a fucking guy in the face to show that you're stronger than him? And, you know, it's a growing sport, specifically because I think that it's catering to the mega machismo that people still need. Like, There's this clothing brand called Affliction, and it is probably some of the nastiest, ugliest bullshit t-shirts, you know, like bunch of skulls and stupid fucking, swishy, graphics or whatever. And they'll charge $130 for a t-shirt that otherwise costs like $2 or $3. And what they try to say is rather than say we're selling you a style, they're like, we're selling you a lifestyle, the fighter lifestyle. You know, the I don't take shit from no one, I drive fast cars, I fuck hot bitches. And this is still, you know, this fantasy that's being fed. I mean, anyone in the business will tell you the same thing, that the people, the men who fight in this, are gigantic children.
Oh, no.
They're not adults, right? They have basically abandoned reality and accepted this sort of mega machismo. And I worry as a man that this is sort of where... this is where people will sort of like put their hopes on, their rests on, that we can reclaim our manhood by punching each other in the face, and that's the only way to do it. Now, that's from the perspective of an actual fan of the sport, okay? I still worry that that's kind of like that false dichotomy that we were creating in the image of man as we try to rescue it from this quote-unquote demise.
Well, and look at the other... I mean, yes, it is a dichotomy. Look at the other side of that coin. Hannah Rosin talks about this whole idea of the Omega Man in the image that we're portraying in advertising. Think back to any commercial. Just imagine any commercial with a guy on it. Now, is he a happy couch potato kind of character? Is he a perpetual adolescent kind of character? We're finding this in our movies. We're seeing this in our advertising where it's like men who are clearly the stay-at-home, not the stay-at-home dad in that they're showing that he's taking care of children, because we're still not okay with that. But he's on the couch, he's eating Cheetos, his wife just came in from work. We see that in commercials all the time. We see these ones where, like, look at all the movies where it's a guy who's having trouble with women because he can't grow up, because he's having trouble, you know, becoming a man. This is a common narrative we're seeing right now in even romantic comedies where we're telling women, like, it's okay, he'll grow up, it's fine. I mean, this is really coming from that other side of where men feel like they are and trying to capitalize on that by saying, like, see, this is you, and that's okay, and, you know, just this image that we're seeing over and over again. So, yeah, so there's these things that we're seeing that are arising, like, all the dating movement and stuff like that, where it's like, you can be a real man, and then there's all the stuff where it's like, yeah, it's okay, be who you are, you know, the happy couch potato, that's fine. And what we really should be talking about is that men not having an identity is unhealthy, and that we need to help them find a new identity. We need to kind of have a man revolution, and we as women need to empower our men to feel comfortable taking on whatever role in society they want. And the problem is that because of this whole image of, you know, you're a woman, you need to take care of yourself, we as women are taught to be very competitive now and to try and survive in quote-unquote the man's world.
Oh, man. Okay, wait, you know? Hold on. I want to go on a tangent for 5 seconds.
Tangent away.
I want to talk about something that we were watching in our quest to look at the stereotypes of what, you know, sort of the new gender roles are. So we watched something called, what was it, Cashmere
Mafia?
Yeah, something like that. Anyways, it'll be in the notes. This was a show that was commissioned for 13 episodes as kind of filler, because I think it was some other show that got canceled mid-season or whatever. It stars a fairly impressive cast. Lucy Liu, the curly-haired guy from Dead Man on Campus, and the chick that kills the what do they call again? Those in Lord of the Rings, you know, the girl that really wants to fuck Aragorn super bad, and then she kills that witch
yeah,
warlock thing?
I don't remember.
Anyways,
those movies were too long for me to remember any of them.
I think anybody out there that's a geek knows exactly what I'm talking about. So and more people of a pretty impressive cast considering how shallow this was. It was so surprising. I mean, it was essentially like an article saying, what are you supposed to do? You're a power woman. How to live your life with the troubles that you have in this new power woman, white woman, world of luxury issue. I'm like, who has these fucking issues? I mean, the characters, you cannot even empathize. We watched it probably for about 20 minutes waiting for one person that you could empathize with to appear that had any kind of problem that you would share, and there were none.
Yep. And the way they talked about the men in their lives was quite disrespectful, honestly. You know, that they were shallow and not doing what they needed to do and disposable. And there was this sense. And if you watch not all of, but if you watch a good portion of, you know, these rom-coms, and this is part of why I don't like it, you know, most men in the power woman sort of rom-com where you're the, you know, you're in charge, is when men are disposable until you meet the right guy who has properly grown up, or until you change him into the guy you want.
Yeah, and the proper guy is also so ridiculously supportive that he's almost spineless.
Yeah, supportive, submissive, you know, I don't know. I think this is part of why I don't like the rom-coms, because either the girl is so helpless and desperate, or the girl is a power woman kind of image a lot of the time. Again, not 100% of the time, but these are the two stereotypes I see in a lot of romantic comedies. And men are disposable to her. And I don't really empathize with either of those types of characters. And I find that they're funny, Yes, and they are supposed to be caricatures, but they are symptomatic of a culture where we've got this rise of women, fall of men issue.
And specifically, I find, like, let's imagine a world in which, say, women really, women really do rise. They have as much, if not maybe even more, power and ability to direct where the world is going than men do. Now, I believe that men already have an issue, either consciously or unconsciously, of being disposable. I mean, think about this. In my lifetime, I produced 2 trillion sperm. You have what, between 200 to 500 eggs or something like that? It's not a lot. Obviously, yours are much more valuable. I have trillions, okay? I produce more sperm than the amount of humans that have ever been alive. So, and every male does this. So to some degree, I mean, back in the day where you had that single mom that can barely make ends meet kind of image, and you had a deadbeat dad who could support her but who doesn't. And yet now the new image is probably, I'm a single mom and I'm doing great. I don't need a loser husband that I would actually have to pay, sort of extra money for. I can do this all on my own. This is still a stereotype, but let me tell you something. I mean, I can't imagine men out there feeling great about that image, and particularly one in, let's be fair, where fathers, for instance, have fewer rights than mothers. Mm-hmm. How would they feel about being disposable, about not being necessary, particularly when they don't have jobs and now they no longer have rights to be able to dictate how their children are being raised? So that is a scary prospect. That is really frightening. I think that's why I was so angry with that whole elevator gate thing that happened in the atheism scene, because I felt that, you know, the feminist movement doesn't need any help from me. It doesn't need me to push it along. I feel like to some degree it's being taken care of, and maybe a little bit, on the other end, we're doing worse, because, I mean, you wonder why men make less money. We're way more likely to drop out of school. We're way less literate. We're always chasing novelty, which is, I guess, what the next part
well,
is.
Well, I mean, I like where you're going with this. I'd love to rattle off some facts, if that's okay.
Yeah, do it.
Just because, I mean, this is a really controversial topic, and I want to state that I'm not talking about every man. I mean, I have a ton of male friends, and when I read this stuff, what kept happening was, in my mind, I would have these moments where I'd read something and I'd be like, none of my male friends are like that. Almost like this intrinsic need to stand up for them. But then the more I read examples and case studies, the more I thought, you know what? Yeah, a lot of them are. And I'm not, I have anecdotal evidence in my own head that not all men are going through this. But these are the numbers we're seeing, and it is a concern. So even if it's not you, I want you to try and empathize with, you know, somebody else in your gender or the opposite gender who might
probably
be going through
someone
this.
That you know.
Probably someone you know. So for the first time, women are occupying more than 50% of management positions, from very few, only a few generations ago. 3 women go to college for every 2 men, and again, this is from almost none 2 generations ago. Women are now making up the majority of the American workforce. Couples in a lot of countries are now requesting female children more than male children in fertility clinics. There's a huge shift in management philosophy, and this is key. From before, it was very much a military strategy. If you read any of the management books from about, starting, let's say, about 20 years ago, about that, and I have, they're very much about, you know, let's talk about the win friends and influence people. It's about, and a lot of those kind of management books, it's about basically keeping the power structure the way it's supposed to be, letting people know who's boss, not letting them take up your time, all these things. This works well in a male-dominated workforce because men respond very well to this whole idea of hierarchy and
authority.
And authority, and also this whole alpha male jockeying for position, whereas women are much more cooperative. And if you read any of the management books coming out now, we see that there's much more this idea of, like, being a muse, helping foster communication, helping create a nurturing environment for the work that people need to get done, and working with the way...
Sounds like pussy bullshit!
Well, but think about it. That's the way women want to work,
of
right?
Of course.
So what's happening is we're seeing the shift in management philosophy from the way that men would do well in a workforce to the way that women would do well in a workforce.
And obviously, in those new work environments, we're going to do a lot worse. So the environments themselves, subtly, are starting to kind of be not so good for us.
Absolutely.
So in the workforce, you need to adapt to a female-dominated world. Let me tell you something, fellas. Most of you are probably not capable of adapting to that.
Couple more facts. Little boys are doing much worse in school than little girls. More than 30% drop out. 30% more boys, drop out than girls. And out of the 15 professions projected to grow the most in the next 10 years, 13 are already dominated by women, and it's only thought that it will get worse. So all the jobs that are growing, pretty much, are already dominated by women because they're creative jobs, and these are environments where women do very well in because there isn't an ego, because we haven't been going to college forever, and there is no ingrained cultural expectation that women should just know everything. Men have this cultural expectation that they're supposed to be right. Men should just know. You should be a man. What does that term mean to you? Just be a man. It's hard for men to go back and retool themselves at school. They're less likely to do it. Whereas for women, learning new skills and looking vulnerable, that's a little bit more comfortable for them. So in a world where we're constantly having to learn new skills, we have to be creative and we have to be willing to be wrong a lot, because a lot of this is uncharted territory. That's an environment that's going to be easier for women to be part of than it is for men to be part of.
But you know what? Here's the thing. I mean, I find we're kind of surprised something like this is happening. But there are lots of examples in nature that we can draw from to understand what's happening. I think one good example was there's this type of monkey. I don't know if it's bonobo. No, it's not a bonobo. Anyways, it doesn't matter. The males are normally very, very violent. The alpha males are, but the beta males are not. They have a very strong hierarchy, and the males never do any of the grooming. It's only the females. But there was one particular troop that, for some weird reason, I don't remember why, but all the violent males were killed, like, immediately, like, all in one shot. So only the beta males survived. And what happened is that after that generation, males did start performing, all this grooming.
Hmm.
So the culture changed. And it changed when all the violent men died. And, you know, I don't want to think that maybe... I don't want to say that I would credit wars or any such things with contributing to the rise of women. But there is something to be said about the fact that many of our more violent individuals have been killing each other. And that a lot of traits that used to say, you know, be something that you would covet, let's say strength and ability to kill foes and, hear the lamentations of their daughters, like Genghis Khan, you know, now we have things like kindness, reliability, you know, different qualities that people find or women find attractive. So I think they're probably part of it also has to do with maybe just the death of a lot of violent individuals.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree that there's that element. However, I would agree that the wars have contributed to the rise of women in that when men go to war, who's left to work? Women are left to work. So women fill all of the positions in the workforce that men had, and it was really hard for men to take those positions away when they came back from the war. And ever since sort of that big shift, we've had this rise of women. But the interesting thing is that before, when we saw rises of women, it was in big jolts. Right. So I think that seems to be easier for people to deal with because they're bigger jolts. They're very deliberate. Everybody can see them. But what's happening with men is this new transition where the male stereotype is no longer the male role is no longer what it used to be, has happened slowly. Not slow enough that we can adapt to it, but slow enough that it wasn't like a bang. So everybody could kind of register and get used to it. So it's this fall that we notice, but we don't know how to react to, and we don't know how to address.
Well, definitely, I know how some people react to it. My father, for instance, is convinced that the solution is going back into the old way of doing things.
Your father, who also called me a mutant the first time he met me, over and over again.
I don't think he quite understands you, but that's because he has a very traditional understanding of gender roles, and that is sort of broken with you and I. Like, I am not a traditional guy.
Right.
I cook. That's what I do. But I'm of the opinion that people should do what they're good at,
yeah,
rather than what their gender forces them to be good at. It's for me the final, let's say, like breaking down the wall of these gender identities that have been shaped for us, leaves us vulnerable, sure, because I'd say in this situation as men we find ourselves at a bit of a disadvantage for the first time. We don't know how to deal with that. And we would probably, a lot of people would probably say the solution is, you know, let's be more conservative, let's go backwards. I suppose that's why I saw it as a pendulum swing. Not so much that gender issues are pendulum swing, but our reaction to these gender identities are pendulum swings, because they're conservative just as they're liberal values. They switch between the two. They'll never, like, where they settle is itself caused by the weights of those pendulums, like...
I think you can also see that there's this, maybe not pendulum swing, but I can see why that they're... Okay, I don't want this secondary issue to go unaddressed. And what it is that, you know, some men are doing
great.
Very, very well.
Very
right?
good.
So your pendulum swing comment kind of reminded me of this, where what's happening is that if you look at the way the recession affected the economy, was that most of the mid-level jobs fell out of the economy. And the higher, more creative level, higher paying jobs rose a little bit, and the lower level jobs rose a little bit as well. And those are jobs right now that women are dominating in. The creative jobs, management type jobs, those are kind of becoming jobs that women do well. And like we saw in the numbers, women make up more than 50% of the management force. And also, because women are going into the workforce but still having children, we're seeing jobs that women used to do at home, like childcare, elder care, food preparation. Those are, women are taking those jobs as well, and those are sort of lower on the economy jobs. So we're seeing women going into the workforce on both ends. But what's really interesting is that men still dominate most manufacturing industries, which is very low on the workforce. And also men dominate in the highest positions, in positions such as CEOs of companies, parliamentary seats, heads of state. That's where men are doing really, really well. And so,
not for profits.
Even not for profits, which is, yeah, I think is very interesting, because not for profits are dominated by women, but men are still. I can show you guys the numbers.
They like their head lions.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I think is interesting, and I mean, this is just me. This is just something I've been thinking about. This part coming up is that I can see why this is the hardest for men, because we see our heads of state, our parliamentary representatives, our CEOs, our men doing well, dealing with this kind of change, and you are not. And I feel like that would be even more crippling, because this fall of men is happening to the men who are in the shadows and not to the men who are in the lights of stage, right? The men True. That we see in the media are doing very well. Some of the numbers are that 190 heads of state are men, 9 are women. Out of the 190 heads of state positions, 9 are women. Out of the parliamentary seats, 13 are women. Top level CEO positions, between 15 and 20%, 20% at the absolute most, are women. And even in not-for-profits, at least only 20% of the top positions are held by women. So women are doing well in management positions, but then the one step up is still dominated by men.
Do you know what it reminds me of a little bit? I think that I call this the reemergence of the lion. Because take a look at a pride of lions, right? Who does most of the work? The ladies. There is one alpha male who benefits from all the work that everyone else does, and then there's a bunch of beta males who hopelessly dream of toppling the alpha and yet never do. Except for that one lucky guy. It's like winning the lottery, right? You get to fuck the whole pride, and the ladies do all the work for you. Gentlemen, I don't know about you, but I don't like that world, because it's essentially, the odds are you're not going to be the top alpha dog.
Well, there is that, but I also think that a lot of it has to do with women themselves and about the sort of cultural stereotypes about women in power. For example, there's a study, Harold and Heidi study, where what they do is they show MBA students sort of like this resume of a potential boss, and they are asked to read it and write what they think about the person. The only difference is that half the students have the same exact description, but the name is Heidi, and the other half the name is Howard. People who got the Howard one said that he was going to be a savvy star maker, and the ones that got Heidi said that she would be a bit of a bitch, she'd be out to help herself, she'd be cruel and self-centered. So that there is that, the problem is that when you think of a woman who's powerful, you have negative stereotypes that get in your way, negative prejudice. And when you think of a man in power, there are positive prejudice. So some of the problem why women aren't getting these top positions may be because we are still blinded by those cultural prejudices. The other problem is that women are still expected to have children. And who the person in the relationship that's actually going to be pregnant is a non-negotiable issue, you know? So what happens is that women get into these jobs, they really love it. As soon as they start doing well, they think, hey, I probably should have a baby soon. That means they're going to have to take 9 months off. That is 6 months to actually be pregnant and have the baby, and then, or sorry, 3 months in their last trimester, 6 months at minimum for proper breastfeeding. So they're probably going to have to take 9 months off from their career, which is a significant amount of time. And as a result, what happens is that as soon as they start thinking about having a baby, studies show that women sort of sit back. They stop contributing as much. They stop asking for the raises. They start looking for the ways that they can help advance themselves because they know that they're going to be leaving. And the interesting thing is that these studies show that even women who don't even have a partner, as soon as they start thinking they might have a child, will start taking a backseat to these kinds of decisions. So in a way, it is sort of our fault as women.
It's the lion. It's the lion. You just need that lazy top person who doesn't actually do anything other than just, like I said, eat other people's foods, but does the necessary fucking. Like, here's the truth, gentlemen. I want to tell you something out there, and it's probably the most honest thing I can tell you as a man, and this is something that you're going to have to accept. I think that all men are going to need to accept, is that in the role of things in which both men and women have an equal say in everything, women will still have more power. That's only because I could say genetically you leave a larger imprint on offspring than men do, right? Not only do they benefit from your mitochondrial DNA, but through the epigenetics and the embryonic process, it will have more characteristics of the female than the male.
I don't think that necessarily gives someone more power.
I don't mean power in the negative sense. It's just it's one of those things that's inevitable because they have the children. It comes out of them. It doesn't come out of you. It comes out of them. That does change the dynamic. But it's, you know, I think that you still have to remember, guys, that these are girls that we're talking about here. They're, you can negotiate with women all the time. You can just talk to them. That's all you have to do. You don't have to strong arm them. You just have to show up with some flowers and you're a fucking hero. All right? It's, they're really easy to negotiate with. Compliments and things like that will change their minds. You need to embrace
so
the fact that...
are you trying to say that this is something that women are considerably more susceptible to than men? Because I feel like...
flowers and gifts?
I don't agree. I feel like men seem to respond extremely well, especially in this new cultural problem we have to compliments and gifts as well.
That's true. Although I say that the susceptibility may be higher in men, the consequences and the lasting effects of, say, a gift to a woman rather than a gift to a man is that the benefits of my gift will last much longer than the benefits of the gift to the man. As in, I'll forget what the fuck you gave me like 15 minutes after you gave it to me. But you, on the other hand, will sort of remember for days. You'll have sort of like sweet eyes and you'll just be nice. It's wonderful. Like, we just get a lot more out of giving presents to women than men get out of it.
I would want to see the numbers on that.
I'm willing to defend this without any evidence. I feel confident about
although
it.
Although I do agree that there might be something like that. I also think that women might be more naturally complimentary than men are. So when men are complimentary, it means more because it doesn't happen as frequently. Although, again, I don't have any numbers on that. But I don't know. I'm always really weary of making comments like, hey, men, women like this. Because whenever I say that, I find that I could easily say, hey, women, men like this, and it's the same sentence. Because really, there's a lot of similarities between men and women.
Yes, but the differences are still strange. I do not get any effect from receiving a flower. I will tell you what. Fabric on my skin is not a big deal.
Yeah, but you would respond quite well to getting a blowjob. Right? I mean, you have to think that...
But like I said, yeah, I would respond well at the time, but trust me, when it's over,
I don't know.
An hour later. I think 1 hour later. I don't even give it more than 30 minutes.
Well, you're not the prototypical man.
I'm not talking about just me here. I'm talking about when something is over. We seek novelty,
and
of all people should know that that's how we are. Maybe that's part of the problem. And guys, if you wonder also sort of like, why are we doing as well, say, online? Why are we learning as well as girls are? Because that is the honest truth. It's not the truth on an individual basis. It's only true in the broadest sense. So why aren't we doing as well? And it turns out that part of it is how we are not only conditioned genetically, but also how we've conditioned ourselves.
Absolutely.
Like, we've been our own worst enemies, boys. Why? Well, we have kind of fed our two most salivating desires, which are games, okay? Not just video games.
Well, but yes, but...
Games,
yes. But specifically, video games are rewiring the male brain.
Yeah, I'll say...
That's where the data
is. The data is there, but don't tell me that sports...
Okay, that's
or
a good point.
Or any
that's
of those, you know, or even say lots of our entertainment doesn't fall into the same category. They're all novelty. They all target the same things. I mean, games that people play, like you know, football games or whatever, they try to explore certain elements that I think are naturally ingrained into us. Like, if you look back, what is the first game that human beings probably played for a long time? I would say the kind of game where something dies and at the end you eat it. You know, and for us, it's very rewarding to hunt. That's why people still fucking hunt, right? But I think that is part of the elements of game and the elements of hunting. All of those elements are really captured in most of the things that take our attention span away from anything that really matters.
Absolutely. For example, Jane McConnell says that by the time that the average male is 21 years old, he's played over 10,000 hours of video games, and mostly in isolation. What's interesting is that if you actually add up the numbers, 10,000 hours is about the same amount of time you spend in high school. So that's a lot. That's a lot of hours.
It's the amount of time that you need to spend in order to master a violin.
Yes, absolutely. So it's this interesting that so men are less likely to be well socialized because they're spending a lot of time in their basement playing video games. The other problem is that the average man, where's the porn one that I found? The average man watches about 50 porn clips per week.
Man, I'm getting low on my average here.
Well, you're in a relationship, so you have kind of like nudity happening all the time.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, is that based on single men, or is that
this is an average
men?
Taken between, I think, men or little boys like 12 to men in their late 30s.
Well, I don't even watch that many because, honestly, if I watch too much, it stops being enjoyable.
Right. But here's the thing, though. I mean, when in the history, you know, honestly, if you're spending 10,000 hours by the time you're 21. Playing video games and you watch 50 porn clips a week, that's consuming the majority of your free time. And that's reconditioning the way little boys' brains are. See, here's the thing. If you want to play video games or watch porn as a grown-up, that's a little bit different. But what's happening is young boys at 10 are playing video games and rewiring the makeup of their brains to respond well to the type of reward systems that are created in video games. And video games create reward and create understanding of
they create expectations
text. Absolutely of where reward is very high and instantaneous
and tasks are really well broken down.
Well,
not just that, but I mean even everything that is a reward, you know what you're gonna get. Like a good example is a person who plays World of Warcraft who takes part in a raid because he wants to get a piece of armor that he's been looking for. Right? So he's like, if I complete this raid, I may get this piece of armor that will complete this, you know, this armor that I want to build. So it takes everything, every little aspect of something that you would otherwise do in the real world, such as I'm going to collect something and build something awesome, and transfers it entirely in a virtual realm where it doesn't really produce that much value. Well, not to you.
But here's the thing. I don't really think that's the problem, because at least in World of Warcraft, you're forced to socialize and make deals, and I feel like World of Warcraft is actually less...
It's an improvement.
It's an improvement. It's less the problem. I think, and most of the research says that the problem is coming from these games where they really dig into the reward mechanism, and they manipulate you by using your reward mechanism to their advantage by giving you things from about when you think you need them or deserve them, or, you know, making tasks easy to follow, making things pretty intuitive. The problem is that if you spend childhood with most of the time that you spend outside of school learning that that's kind of how the world works, and most of the time, like the times you play with your friends after school, that's really when you learn to socialize, it's really when you learn about the world, because sitting in class doesn't actually do that much for you. If that's
it's a waste of time. It's
well,
like,
except
it's
for
like babysitting.
Learning academically.
Learning?
I just mean about learning
about
the way the world works. Learning how to talk to women. Learning how to have strong relationships. When you take the factors that exist in video games and you try and use those in the real world, that's not really what it takes to build a career. Building a career is not intuitive. The steps are not clear. So men are having trouble building this breaking down complicated tasks into the essential elements. They're having trouble talking to women because building a strong relationship takes a lot of time and is honestly not very rewarding at
Well, think about this. What was huge just a couple of years ago, because of all these men striking out? The Game, right? Penetrating
right.
the world of pickup artists. Neil Strauss. The Game is just trying to intellectualize a way of tricking women into sex.
And I think what's so interesting about The Game is that it's called The Game. I mean, doesn't that just tell ya
lights should be flashing
exactly
above your
in
head.
Your head. It's just okay, so little boys are playing a ton of not necessarily video games, but games in isolation. So how do you learn how to pick up women and have proper relationships? In isolation, reading a book called The Game.
Right.
Very, very telling. The other thing that we're finding is that, let's talk a little bit about the way that religion is affecting this. In school, we're seeing a lot of abstinence-only education, and as a result, because porn is so easy to find on the internet, little boys have started learning about sexuality through porn, which, atomically, might not be such a problem, but what's happening is that when women are introduced to, for example, personally, I have a tendency to date older men, and when I do date younger men, this is anecdotal, of course, but there is research behind this, when I date younger men, I find I get asked to do things that are much more adventurous, but that neither of us like in the end, right? Where they feel like I need to, in the video, the woman who talks about this, Sydney Gallup, she talks about how when she was dating young men, she kept having them ask to come on her face. And what was interesting is that older men never asked for that, and it wasn't that they were shy, it was that there's a very small percentage of people who like that. And also there's a whole element that having sex where there's a lot of physical contact is actually stimulates you more and is more psychologically and physically rewarding. But young men seem to want to have sex where they're further apart because that's how it looks in porn, so that you get the good camera angles, right? That's not actually what is the most satisfying.
They don't like necessarily just the ball slappy shit.
Exactly. So there's a lot of problems with little boys watching a lot of porn in a couple of reasons, because one, that's what they're learning women want, and that's what they're learning that they should want, which is not necessarily true. And they're expecting, like, they're walking into a situation, they're like, oh, I watched all this porn, of course I know how this is going to go down, and they have no idea, and they're striking out over and over and over again, because for the most part, women will be like, okay, sure, and then never talk to you again. And it's like, you know, the percentage of
he
people...
He put a carrot up my butt, I don't want to talk to
exactly,
you anymore.
Exactly.
What a surprise.
A lit candle, something like that from the porn, the pirates porn, where I'm like, I don't think that anybody would, well, some people might like that, but I feel like that's a very small percentage.
I feel like here's what's going to happen. You finish having sex, and then you look at each other and say, clearly, I'm going to remember this for a while if you're around. So any memory that might associate what the fuck just happened, that's bad. So please go away. Please get out of my memory range.
Yep.
I think that to some degree, too, I mean, to go back to your whole men striking out thing, I feel that to some degree, we're all unsure, you know, walking in uncharted territory now, saying, what's the best way to hook up now? You know, I remember watching a 1950s newsreel video demonstrating to teens how to date, right? I don't know if it was useful, but it was at least something. Because let me tell you, in some countries, they have to really try to explain to people how to have children. And I mean by that, like, explain to them how to fuck. You know, and we have a very twisted sexual morality, I feel, as apes, as great apes. I don't know why. Well, I blame religion, but I still think that we've always been. Think about it, where people have sex for the most part, right? In private, away from other people. We like to kind of keep it to ourselves to some degree. And I think because we've done that, there's so much about it we've never really talked. So there's a tendency for things to be either overreactions, like, for instance, say you have a couple where one guy's 18, the girl's 16, and you're like, that's statutory rape. And you're like, you know what? Like, fuck off. Like, is are we really that crazy now that that's what we're gonna do, where we just decide there's this rule that we can't break, where we understand, well, maybe they're at the same place sexually, you know what I mean? Like, we don't all develop at the same time, not only physically as in when we hit puberty, but also when are we ready to sort of slowly evolve into our sexual maturity? It takes time. That's why people that are priests and shit like that, where they're not allowed to do anything, that's why they molest, because sexually they're at the level of children and they've never been able to express that. They have this really fucked up concept of what it's supposed to be like, and they molest your fucking kids as a result because of this diseased attitude towards sex. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm worried that we might be going into a sort of like a different type of problem, like you were saying before, where we miss opportunities to connect with other human beings because we have all of these sexual hang-ups caused, if you will, by our what we anticipate sex should be like from mm-hmm. watching this. Now, this is me talking. This is a man who has watched a ton of porn, still saying, like, how much is too much? And mm-hmm. I admit that even probably some of my hang-ups, some of my problems are related to this image that I had of myself and what I needed to be in order to be sexual, and only something that as you grow into adulthood you finally shed and say, this is all just fucking bullshit. I'll fuck the way that I want to fuck and that feels good, and that is it. That's what I'm gonna do. But
yeah. I mean, how many people right now are having sex for a camera right that's now. Not in the room? Well, yes, listening to this, because my voice is so arousing.
You know what? I hope there's at least one couple. If you're out there, if you have had sex at least one radio show just by accident, please let me know. That would
make
put that
day.
On my list of things that have happened.
But what I'm trying to say is that, and I mean, I've been part of these sexual events where you are having sex for a camera that's not there. You know, everything
feels like a performance.
Everything feels like a performance. And you feel very disconnected from your partner. And those are unpleasant experiences, to say the least. And they're very common with younger men. In my experience, it's more common with younger men. And I think it is because of what Sydney was talking about, where she's really seen this rise of the problem, where with abstinence-only education, little boys are getting their information from porn. Porn is the fastest-growing industry right now. For every 4 movies that are made, 400 movies that are made, 1,100 porns are made. It's crazy.
Well, it is also quite easy when the production value is so low.
But think about it. If you're making 1,100 porns for every 400 movies, think about how much novelty you're going to have. And if you're interested in finding out more about this whole problem with video games and porn causing people to, you know, have these weird expectations, you can read more from psychologist Philip Zambardo, who talks about how video games and porn are arousal addictions. And they are really, like, the porn industry is ran by men, directed towards men, you know, in every way it's all about men. So men are falling prey to this crazy need for
variety.
novelty, because we're making so much porn, we gotta show different stuff. And if you're watching 50 clips a week, I can see how something would get boring pretty quickly, because you're certainly not, I mean, if you're having sex 50 times a week, hell yeah, you'd want to do something a little bit different. And realistically, in the brain, when you watch a sitcom, so the same things are happening as if you were having a conversation.
Now,
so
I do,
what's
I,
happening in the brain yeah. when you're watching porn, realistically? Is
well,
that the same as having a sexual experience as far as where the brain lights up?
Let me tell you this, though. I want to make a kind of a bit of a, put a bit of a comment, a signing statement on this.
Ooh.
50 clips a week. Because let me tell you something. I think that 30 of those clips were you just looking for a girl that you could finally think was hot. You don't
right.
watch all of them. You know what I'm talking about, all of you porn viewers, where it takes you a while to find something that strikes your fancy. But that might just be because, you know, I don't know if I'm picky, but I don't want to just watch anyone fuck. Certainly, that is how most movies seem to take the attitude. Sure, as long as people are fucking, people watch it. I'm not that kind of guy, but maybe I'm in the minority. I don't know.
I don't know. I think there is probably some of that, but I do think it is a lot of
it's
porn.
High. It's
because
it's
a lot. Free, a lot of it, and it's everywhere. It's a lot of video games, a lot, and there's nothing wrong with video games, and there's nothing wrong with porn. There's nothing wrong with it. But porn in combination with abstinence-only education in terms of childhood sexual development, there is a problem with that. And way too much video games in lieu of proper socializing with not only members of your own sex, but especially members of the opposite sex, is a problem.
Definitely when, you know, I see or hear of a lot of guys that should be in relationships, you know, otherwise good guys that still have problems where they're not interacting with girls in the proper way. Something definitely
well,
is
that,
wrong
that same there. Guy from the psychologist Zimbardo, he's been monitoring the shyness of boys in his college and a couple other colleges. He has like he monitors it for first year students going to college, and the level that boys coming into college who feel very a lot of anxiety, a lot of shyness from talking to women has been steadily rising. And this is part of it, I'm sure of it. When your expectations sexually are porn, doesn't that also put it at you in a situation where not only on a some kind of conscious level you think, oh yeah, I know how it goes, I'm the guy, but then on a subconscious level you realize, no, it's fake. You have no real idea of what women want, and when you have a couple of sexual encounters where you, hey, can I come on your face, and all these things that you expect women like and that you think you should like and you feel pressured to like, and you know what, if you genuinely like that, awesome, good on ya. Good on ya. I have nothing wrong with that, but I feel like a lot of people say they like things that they don't because they feel like there's an expectation that they should, especially women are doing this, and that's creating these weird relationships where, like, you have sex with a girl and she never wants to talk to you again, and it makes you feel like, was I bad? Well, you just didn't really know what to do. You were unsure, which is not sexy, and you were oversure about things that somebody else didn't enjoy, and you didn't really bother to ask, or when you did, it felt forceful, or there's a lot of things that could go wrong, right?
But let's paint this in another light, too. I mean, it's not as though we've been benefiting from, living in a world in which there's been absolute, 100% the greatest and clearest sex in the world. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, everything was fine until now. I think we only find ourselves in the problem where I'm at the grocery store and I see 10,000 brands of bread and I don't know what kind of brand of bread to take. Where we live in a world of choice and we are, we're glorified monkeys. So once in a while we're going to be confused. I feel like we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves when looking at the situation of, say, okay, porn and video games may be a problem. Well, who had foresight? It's hard to know. And when you think about the problems, like everyone else assumed that the problem of men watching more porn and more video games would be they would be more violent and that they would there would be more rape. But it turns out that actually those things significantly lower the chance of rape and lower the chance of violence, because in a sense we now have something to occupy our time. But that's not always a good thing. And, just like you can have something beautiful, a little piece of turd can come right out of it. A steaming pile of poo.
But you can die from drinking too much water. I mean, the thing we have to think about here, it's there's nothing wrong with video games. There's nothing wrong with porn. It's just when and in excess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it should be at the right time and to the right amount. But we still don't really know what that amount is. But I think we can agree that maybe 50 clips a week for the average man and 10,000 hours by the age of 21 might be a bit on the high side.
Might be high, boys.
Just a little.
Might be time to check out a different website. Maybe read some of my articles instead of whacking it. Huh? Nah, don't read them. They suck. Is there anything else we want to cover on the show? I feel like we covered everything pretty generally and broadly.
Yeah.
I think it's going to generate some discussion. Here's the deal. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that we could talk about.
There's a lot.
And we're going to wait and see what kind of discussions we have on the site. So you can go to the site, leave comments if you want to hear more about it. Because the truth is, remember how we had done a show about sexism before, and I didn't want to put it up. And I'm glad that I didn't, because
this was better.
This was much better.
Yeah,
I think it was better because you know, the other one was more frustration. This is a kind of like, I get it now. I can see that there is a problem, but, you know, at the same time where we lament the fall of men, quote unquote, and I want to be careful about how we phrase that, because really I feel that it is a new opportunity for men, because our fathers inherited a world that was just as confusing for them, and yet they feigned certainty. And the world that we have now is essentially more of a confused mess than what they inherited. They didn't figure it out, but we need to. And I think part of that means that we play different roles. It's not up to men to solve the problems of the world. It's up to all of us. And where our fathers failed is that they didn't listen to their wives, to their mothers, their sisters, you know? We live in a world in which, well, we're not really going to have much of a choice.
I think one other thing to think about is that Tony Porter talks about the man box. He's got a really great TED video I really encourage you to like check out. And he's always really fought for, he feels like there's a lot of pressure on men. You live in this man box where there's these expectations and there are these roles that you're expected to follow, and you're not supposed to cry, and you're not supposed to, you know, don't be a pussy. And, you know, he talks about this guy he talked to, who this student, this athlete, and he asked him, if somebody called you a girl, if your dad called you a girl, how would that make you feel? And he said, I would be destroyed. Now, what does that mean? If what does that mean that we think about the roles of men and their expectations to act, if he would be destroyed to be thought of as a girl, i.e. not a man? And I think we should think about not just men. I think that some of the onus should really be on women to realize that we're in a position right now where we're doing really well. And a lot of feminists are taking a step forward and saying, you know what? I'm still a feminist, but feminism should be about gender issues. And right now there's a lot of gender issues surrounding men. And we should try and be supportive. You know, it's hard. It's really hard for that man box. I mean, women need to allow boys to be a bit more emotional. You need to let them talk. Because I am definitely at fault of saying, you're a pussy, you're being a little bitch. I do that all the time. And after reading this, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Well, we have, we're just as emotional as women, except we don't like to admit it.
That's maybe not just as emotional. Still emotional.
I'm not saying the same emotions, necessarily.
Okay.
You know, I think I have a greater capacity for anger, although I don't think you've ever seen my capacity.
True.
You've only experienced the tiny little amount that I constantly jab at.
Yeah,
and then the
I've
occasional raising of the voice.
I've experienced like residual anger, like people talking about times you got angry and them still not being okay with it.
In what way exactly? That's... Are they traumatized?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not traumatized. It's just, it was definitely an experience.
It was shocking to
them. It was shocking.
I think it's only shocking, though, because it happens so rarely. If I was an angry person, then maybe people would sort of like, oh, yeah, he just flips out. It's just scarier when someone who just seems as though they're collected reveals that he's just as fucking psycho as every other monkey. You know what I mean? Able to snap if pushed to the limit. It's a sad thing about us, but oh, well. What can we do?
Yeah, what can we do?
We inherited what we inherited. You can't change that yet. And if you could, a whole bunch of people in robes would be telling you not to, because they'd say that you're playing the role of their imaginary friend, which is up to them to decide what that role is, I guess. All right, well, I'd like to thank my special guest, Carissa, for coming on the show and pretty much getting this thing done, because we've been talking about it for weeks and I've been delaying it forever.
talking about
doing it and then not doing it, but we finally did it. Tell me that it's recording. No, I'm just joking.
Oh my
god,
it
is recording. I'm just joking with you. And remember, if you are a fan of the show, you love the show, well, there is a bonus podcast. It's one more podcast a week. It's $20 a year and it's how we survive. So if you want to contribute, please do so. Go to the site www.thegoodatheist.net and you'll see all the little buttons that'll point you in the right direction. Go to the membership section and then sign. And you can also, even if you don't want to give me money, because I guess maybe I don't deserve it, you think, you can still be a free member and you get shows. In fact, you get a show that I just posted 2 days ago with me and Ryan. It's a hilarious show. I give him a quiz of the this movie called God of Wonders. Has a teacher's guide. It's a creationism video. And I ask him all the best questions from that guide. I think you guys would love it. So be sure to go to the site. Be a free member, even if you don't want to be a paying patron, because even that is something. And I'm going to get you, motherfucker.
Why'd you got to leave it like that?
Just because I got to warn them. I got to warn them. I'm going to get them, you know?
Like, so it's they just, can brace themselves.
That's right. Well, if I learned anything from drug dealers, is that you need to get people to try free samples, because you get them, and then they'll be yours. And you're going to be mine. You hear me? You're going to be mine, listener. You're going to be hooked on my crack, and you're going to be paying me, well, $20 a year.
Which is nothing.
Well, I never said that I was a, you know, immoral dealer. Why can't we have good dealers? You just get it. I don't want to have five people hooked on shit that costs $5,000. I just want to have a million people hooked on something that costs like 15 cents. I think that's the better way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah? You agree? Okay. Well, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.